This interview is being conducted as part of the Australian Garden History Society's Oral History Project. It's an interview with Mr. Lindsay Bond at his home in Pennant Hills on Tuesday, the 2nd of December 2003, and the interviewer is Rosalind Burge. Lindsay, thank you for participating in this project.
Have you got it coming through? Sorry?
It's coming through now,
right.
Yes.
Yeah.
And if you could give me your full name.
Lindsay Dangar, D-A-N-G-A-R, B-O-N-D, Bond.
And your date of birth?
The Lindsay is S-A-Y, not S-E-Y.
Right.
Right.
And your date and place of birth?
I was born in Greenwich, New South Wales, on the 24th of November, 1923.
And of course, Lindsay, the Australian Garden History Society wanted to place on record the significant involvement of your wife, Beth, in the establishment of the society in New South Wales, and sadly she passed away in March this year, so that's why I'm talking to you. Could you tell me something about Beth?
Beth was born, as far as I know, in Croydon, New South Wales, on the 15th of January 1924. Her name, she was christened for her grandmother, Florence Elizabeth Bond, but Madsen she was, not Bond. But she was always known as Beth. What else do you want there? Do you want the date of death?
I've got that in March.
Oh, have you got that? She died at Suzhou in China on her way to a conference of the International Camellia Society, which was going to be held at Tsinghua. And she died a few days after arriving in China. That was on the 3rd of March, 2003. Right.
I'd like to come back and talk to you about your travels and involvement with the Camellia Society, but how did your interest and Beth's interest in gardens and landscapes begin?
Well, her mother, who lived to be a vigorous and active old lady, lived on her own at Mangrove Mountain for about 60 or 70 kilometres north of where we are today. She went up there and had to go up there during the Depression. The property actually belonged to her father. It was an orchard. He retired up there in about 1914. She married fairly late in life to Sidney Bush Madsen, who was a surveyor, who fell on hard times in the Depression. They went up there, I think from memory, about, I wasn't involved, of course, at that stage of business. I think it was about 1930 or so that they went up there, and he continued to do a bit of surveying, but more or less semi-retired. But they were a good deal older than the usual for parents. I think the mother was about 36 when Beth was born. She was the eldest of four children. She was actually born, I think, at Croydon, as I said before, and they were up there, and she came down to Sydney in 1941, and she was working in the Perpetual Trustee Company at that stage, and my father happened to be an officer of that company, and I met her when I was in Sydney in about the early half of 1943, and about 12 months after that I went off to New Guinea and more or less disappeared until about the middle of 1946 when I came back, and at the end of that, of 46, we married. I had been in touch with her naturally as a very sporadic letter writer up to that point. Everyone else's boyfriends wrote a letter every week, I didn't. And then when I got back, I found they were all damned liars. They didn't know more than I had. Yes, well, that was that. And how did we get into the garden? Well, Rita, Beth's mother, was a great gardener. She gardened, she was at more than 100 when she left up there at Mangrove Mountain and came down. She decided it was time she packed it all in and came down to the nursing home, Cheslow Nursing Home at Beecroft. And she had a garden up there, which, in spite of having no water or running water,
or anything like that. She managed to keep going. It was a very fine garden, had a few camellias and things in it. Actually, the garden is still there. Her son bought the property after the old lady died, and he developed it, and it's quite a well-known garden now. And the old house and the old garden is still in existence up there.
Does the garden have a particular name?
Yes, Garrowin.
Garrowin.
Yeah.
So you and Beth married and got involved with the Garden History Society?
Oh, eventually. We fiddled about. We had a wretched piece of land at Beecroft that had been part of a cow yard. The front of it had absolutely no soil at all. It was the night holding paddock for the cows, and it had been dug off. The manure had been dug off that, you see, and of course when they dug the manure off, they took the topsoil as well, and it was just a patch of about 60-odd feet square of solid clay, which you couldn't do a damn thing with. But out the back of the house, it was quite extensive from the back of the house we built to the back fence is about 150 feet, so it really was about 1 3/4 normal suburban blocks. Beth always used to say it was such a fine garden because it had been a cow yard. That might have been true for about the first 12 or 18 months, but after that we'd depleted everything it was in. We couldn't grow much because it was so exposed. It had no trees. We planted some trees, which rather foolishly we planted gum trees. However, I've left there now, so they're not my problem anymore.
They were your problem for a long time, though, weren't they?
Well, you wouldn't believe it, but we went there in 1952. We moved onto the site just after the birth of our second daughter. And we couldn't really garden for about 8 or 9 years because it was such an exposed site. Actually, from there, if you look at the map, we went down there and had a look at it now, you'd be amazed. We could actually see Mount Gibraltar at Barrel on a good day, right across the back of the Pennant Hills Ridge.
What was the address of this?
27 Cardinal Avenue.
It says how much Sydney's greened up in that time.
Oh, well, you know, the golf course, Pennant Hills Golf Course, we had to remove many, many trees there after the big blow of 91 that came through. The golf club was fined by council for cutting trees back without permission. It was done because they had killed somebody there in such a weakened state. But there actually have been two or three, to my knowledge, aircraft land on that. You couldn't put one down on it now. But when I first remember the course back in the 50s, there was very little timber there at all. In fact, Beecroft is known as a leafy suburb, but I could see when I was building the house or walking down from the station, I could, from the ridge where you come off Beecroft Road, I could actually see the house. Well, you'd no more see that house now than Flight of the Moon because it's just a mass of trees. In fact, I had to have one tree removed about a year or so ago. It got a bracket fungus in it. And it was dangerous. It was a tree. The tree was 100 feet high. I was abused by some of my neighbours for destroying old growth forest. Actually, I had planted that tree. It was a big blue gum. Yes, I planted about, we planted about, I think there were about 6 or 8 gums on the block.
And you were telling me you planted a number of camellias as well.
Oh, yes, we got into camellias. Mainly through Beth's mum. She was one of the old school, and she knew Hazelwood's nursery down at Epping, and she and Beth went down there and they bought various misnamed camellias. We discovered they were misnamed later on. The nurserymen still are misnaming things. But they brought these things up, and of course they didn't do too well because they were sitting out in broad sunlight, which doesn't improve a camellia. Sasanquas weren't as popular then or as well known as they are now, and we got into this and some of our friends were involved with the Camellia Society, and there's two Camellia Societies. There's the local one, the Australian Camellia Research Society, which was started by Waterhouse, and there's also the International Camellia Society, and Waterhouse was also the genius behind that. But we were involved with the International Society because they used to organise very good tours occasionally to international conferences. The first one we went on it because it was through Spain and Portugal. And as I'd always been historically interested in the Peninsular Wars between Napoleon and Wellington and all that game, and I realised that this tour was going to go through that country, so I had no objection to going on it. Camellias didn't come into it, as far as I was concerned at that stage. But then I found that I did get an interest in camellias, and I had about 140 growing in the garden altogether. Some good, some bad, some quite indifferent, a few rare ones. I've got brought a couple of them up here to where I am at the present time. A lot of cuttings were taken off them. I exhibited them, and I've got a box that's got somewhere about 200 cards in it for various prizes, first, second, thirds, and what have you, that I won over the years, but I don't exhibit anymore.
Was Bethers involved in the Camellia Society?
She was, yeah, she was, but not as much as I was. I was on the Camellia Society committee for about, 13 or 14 years, because I didn't join the local Camellia Society until I'd left work in 1985. I retired when I was 62, you see, and I just didn't have the time to go pottering off somewhere at regular intervals to meetings and be involved at all. But the International Camellia Society really didn't require any involvement much, personal involvement. But we went to Spain and Portugal. We had one conference out here. The Japanese were so impressed with the way they were treated at that conference that they invited those of us who'd worked on the committee to go with our wives to Japan as their guests. I mean, we had to pay our fares and board and lodging, naturally, but they passed us from one branch of the Japanese Camellia Society to another over a period of 3 weeks, and thank God it was only for 3 weeks. I don't think I could have stood another week. I'd have died.
What was so taxing about it?
Well, you know, my friend Goro Amure, who's a gentleman about the same age as myself, and we found that on several occasions we would have been on the opposite sides of the fence during the late 40s and not that far apart. Mm. He was in the Japanese Navy. And Goro and I used to sit up at night putting the world to rights and drinking sake and overeating. And generally, but he's a good mate, old Goro, he's all right. Yeah, so that was that. But and we went to America with them. They were out, Camellia Society was out here. And as I say, we had involvement with the people from the International Camellia Society, other countries coming to Australia. We were involved with them.
Was that before your involvement in the Australian Garden History Society?
Yes, it would have been. Now, I retired in 85, and we went to Spain and Portugal and the Channel Islands to a conference. I can't remember exactly when it was, but it would have been probably in the around about 1980.
It began in 1980, so that's very early on.
How that came to pass, getting involved with the Garden History Society, was that there was a gentleman down the Southern Highlands, Tim North, who ran a little magazine thing. Now he was, and his wife, Kiva, were well known to a number of people who were involved with the Beecroft Garden Club. Now, we'd been involved with the Beecroft Garden Club since its inception.
When was that, Lindsay?
Oh, in the 50s. It started off as the Beecroft Progress Association. I got involved in it mainly because some person wanted to build a dairy, milk depot, on the block of land next door to me. And the place was unsewered. I mean, it was ridiculous. Anyway, we knocked that on the head. Once we disposed of that, what are we going to do with this group that we'd formed? So somebody got the bright idea we'd form the Beecroft and District Garden Club, which is still going. And at one stage of the piece, actually, Beth was the president of it. But we were members of that. I'm still a member of it. In fact, on Friday night this week is the Christmas party, just down the road here at the garden. But Beth was always involved in it, and she, at one stage of the game, took herself down to adult education classes, tech, I'm not too sure what it was, but she and another very dear friend of hers used to go down there every week or so for a year or two doing a horticultural course.
Which tech was that?
I don't know. I was away a lot. The job I had involved me being away, so we sort of, in that regard, we had two separate lives. I mean, when I was home, but I mean, it she did a lot of things that I wasn't involved in.
Just to digress for a moment, just briefly about your own career.
Yeah.
You worked for CSR for a long time.
I did, in the building materials group.
Yes. And that you started there as a cadet?
Oh, yes, that was back in 1941.
Right.
But I was only there for a year. They were very lucky. They got rid of me after 12 months and sent me off to the war for 4.5 years. And I think they hoped I wouldn't come back, but I did.
A very different cadetship.
Yeah. Well, I learned a lot of things. None of them had much application in civil life, but...
I'm sorry, Lindsay.
Go on.
I was going to say that Beth and her friend went to horticulture at Tech.
Yeah, and I'm not quite sure the extent of that. All I know is that she was a person with quite an incredible memory. She had trouble with Latin names, but that didn't matter much because I could easily sort that out for her. Once she saw a plant and had it identified, she would remember it. You know, you mightn't see a plant for years and say, oh, that looks like so. Yes, I think that here may be. And sure enough, if you went and looked the book up and hunted around, you'd probably find it. 9 times out of 10, she was right. Alan Seale, the late Alan Seale, he lived in Beecroft. We knew him very well. In fact, he was an uncle of a very good friend of ours. And Alan reckoned that she was one of the best taxonomists as far as he could work out, but for an amateur. I mean, she was any amateur. But she could remember these plants and identify them, and she was quite good at that. So that was one of her great strengths, actually, as far as the garden was concerned. Yeah, so that's not... go on.
Did she enjoy the committee work with the Beecroft group?
I think she enjoyed. She was very good on committees. I served on committees with her. And, in fact, we were a nice balance. I'm somewhat impulsive and brutal, and she was not. And she used to keep me under control, more or less. But she used to make me chuckle. You know the way committees, sometimes you have a committee meeting going. This was when she'd be just on the committee, not as president or anything, and you know the way they go round and round and round in circles. She'd put up with us as long as she could, and then she'd just sort of look at whoever was in charge, the chairman of the chair. Now, just exactly what is it we're trying to do? Is it so-and-so and so-and-so, or as I think it should be, so-and-so and so-and-so? And she'd leave it at that. And you can bet your sweet love it'll all come back together. She's very good at that sort of thing. I mean, I'd be just like, shut up and stop carrying on. But, you see, that was the environment I was brought up in.
Yes, yes.
You know, when you're running a business, you haven't got time for niceties.
And a nice balance in that sort of
thing. Oh, yeah. Oh, she was good. Well, that was one of the reasons so many people knew her, because, you know, she never... I never heard her openly criticise anybody, even privately. She'd never criticise anyone. It might be obvious that she didn't care much for them, but they would have not been aware of that, mostly. She's a much better person than I am. Much better. Yes, now that gives you a bit of a background. So anyhow, this group from the Beecroft Garden Club, they had some connection with the Norths. And the Garden History Society started in the Southern Highlands, you see, and then they wanted Robin LaWarne and one or two others got an idea that it'd be good to have a Sydney branch working. It didn't work well for a start because they didn't have many people who were really what I called hands-on type gardeners. There were a few, Robin LaWarne and one or two others, but it wasn't until they started getting some of the professional ins. I can't think of their names now, but I mean they were people who were well known. I think one that does come to mind though was Valerie Swain. See, Valerie Swain only lived up the road from us, and through the Camellia Society we knew Valerie Swain, and she wasn't quite a neighbour, but she was nearly a neighbour, and she was quite a help. And once we got those sort of people into it, then we started to get the members coming in.
Professional nursery plants people.
Yeah, and landscapers. And In fact, it's the Garden History Society's great strength, I think. I don't know. I only know what I see in the magazines. But to me, it's really to perpetuating the landscape work done in gardens and that sort of thing.
There's been a change in the style of landscaping.
In gardens. Yes. Don't start me on that. It's like this business of have an Australian native garden, it doesn't need watering. I've never had such a load of rubbish in my life. Australian natives will digest as quickly without water as anything else will. Also, most of them are pretty damned unattractive unless you've got a 40-acre paddock.
Shall we go back to the Norths and the Southern Highlands?
Well, the Norths, that's all right. Well, the Norths had this down in the Southern Highlands, and Sydney was a sort of a stepchild that poddled along, not doing too well. Anyway, after the Norths had been down, they went down to the Southern Highlands, and... Right? Yeah, well, the Norths were running this down there in the Southern Highlands, and there were requests that we have a bridge in Sydney. Wrecked the acoustics.
No, that's fine.
Anyhow, and there were people were interested. Anyhow, the Beth and she got involved with it with Robin Lawarn, and they were fiddling around. And I think who was the other one? There was somebody else.
Would it be Jan Glusky?
Yeah, Jan Glusky came into the act too. Don't know whether Jan was... I think Jan might have been the president at that stage or chairperson or something or other, but, you know, they worked very hard to get things going. They had a few meetings. I can't quite tell you much about those because Beth was involved with those. I went on outings with them and things, but there was a bit of a conference here in Sydney at one stage of the piece. I remember that because in those days I was sailing every Saturday, and I came back into town on the Saturday, and we stayed in town because we were going off to do something or other on the Sunday with them as a group. Robin Lawarn's probably got all that stuff anyhow, I would think, because we didn't keep any records much at all.
What was your memory of that conference?
Not much, because I wasn't really involved in it. I was out sailing around the harbour in the boat. I came back for the food and drink in the evening. I was always good on food and drink. I still am, actually. And then I think we probably did something on the Sunday. I can't remember what it was. That might have been the Sunday we all went out to Rookwood, which is a magnificent piece of garden history. I can't remember what it was. But Robin Lawarn's probably got all that stuff. But the two of them worked terribly hard, cajoling people to go on conferences and things. One, we had about a half a bus full that we managed to cart up to the Mudgee for a weekend. That was rather fun. The people up there, I can't remember who it was, the place we saw, but it was one of the grazing families. I think it might have been some of the Hordens. But
it's a nice area, Mudgee.
Oh, it's magnificent, yeah. They have mink sinks.
Mixed.
Fur line. No, well, it's a very rich area. But it was really an interesting weekend. I used to go on these things. I mean, okay, I'm interested in horticulture. I know a little bit about gardening and one thing and another. But I must confess, I used to have great fun with the people that we'd go to visit and, talking to them. And not necessarily about gardens. But,
do you remember any particular people you met along the way?
Yeah, I can't remember their names, though. It's a good while ago, and yes. A lot of things have happened since, but Ron Warren could tell you. At Mudgee, the Morts, still Morts up there. I don't know if they're called Morts, but they're the Mort family, Mort Stock and all that sort of thing, and Goldsborough Mort and so forth. And they have a property at Mudgee, and actually the house is a farm building, like a barn. And they've put another level inside the thing, a sort of mezzanine floor. And we went out there for dinner this night, and it was great. What they'd done with this thing, just a concrete floor and this thing and a bit of an annex on the side where the ablutions were. And they were the Mort family, which I had some knowledge of the Morts because there were Morts down at Hunter's Hill, naturally. And I knew some of them. I think actually one of the Morts was at school about the same time as I was. But,
was Howard Tanner involved at that time?
Well, Howard came into the act through... Who was it? The Minters. Now, Howard, what's the name that died just recently? She was one of the Hordens, I think it was, and a woman of considerable influence around the town. Her daughter was, I think it's her daughter, that's the connection. Her daughter is married to Howard Tanner. There's no good being a landscape architect and a good architect unless you've got good social connections. It's a waste of time completely. You work for somebody otherwise. Howard, we got to know Howard quite well. Howard tolerates me because I went to the same school. He went to the same school that I went to first. In fact, he's done a magnificent job on Sydney Grammar. I don't know if you've seen the new portico they put on there.
I haven't. I believe it's a success.
Ah, well, the building was never finished. And they put that, and I think it cost them the best part of $1 million, I don't know. But, a couple of fellas died and left a heap of money. Well, one friend of mine died 18 months or so ago. And, as far as I know, he left them about 750,000. He was a bachelor.
So Howard was involved at that time?
Howard was involved. There were other people. I'm just trying to think. Baggett's was another name that comes to mind, and I think that was to do with Baggett's timber mill up in the north, in the Willumbar area, but I wouldn't be sure about that. But there were a lot of people sort of hanging around the fringes of the thing, anxious for it to go. Nobody was involved with committees and things. They'd come along to things, yes, if they got noticed, but nobody got involved. And these two, they worked for a few years like a pair of galley slaves. I used to have bits of paper all over the place because I used to help with, dressing envelopes and doing all that sort of thing. Then all of a sudden, when the landscape, I think it was myself, that when the landscapers and the professionals came into the act, that it started to go. And if you look at it now, Colleen Morris is, she's a horticultural historian, isn't she, sort of, almost.
She's the national president now and has done a great deal.
Oh, she was president of New South Wales for quite a while too. Yes. Jan Glusky did a wonderful job of organising weekends and things. But the funny part about it is that most of the people that I know that got us involved with it aren't with it anymore. They dropped out once it started to go properly.
So they were there at the
beginning. They were there at the beginning when it was down at Bowral, but when the whole thing moved down to Sydney and it looked like they were getting caught up in a bit of hard work, they retired hurt.
Well, there is the Southern Highlands brand.
Yeah, I know that. Yeah, but you see, they were quite comfortable down here in Sydney. The Southern Highlands running the branch and doing all the hard work, and they were, doing all the social functions. But when it came to being down here, the darlings disappeared. Some of them did, like breath on a mirror. Well, that happens all the time anyway. I mean, we don't know who they were, those people, anyway.
But the society has continued to flourish in your mind?
Oh, I think it's going better now than ever. In fact, I think the publication they put out now, I got one the other day, yesterday it came, it's one of the best things there is. The other one that is a much more hands-on gardening thing is the New Zealand Gardener, which I'm going to stop getting. I bought it for Beth for a number of years. And they're the two best gardening publications I know.
So there's a role for the history and analysis of gardening?
Well, I think there is. And I think it's important. You see, I don't know that they did it, but somebody muttered something about our garden before it got totally destroyed when I was selling rice. That they'd go out and have a look at that. I mean, I don't really think it was a good garden because it was like Topsy had just growed it
didn't have any rhyme. I mean, I did the original layout of it, and Beth put the plant material in, and it still more or less conformed to the original thing we had in mind. The two axes, one coming down from the back of the house that way, and the one from down the garden going that way down the other side. And there were all sort of little gardens off it, little rooms off it. But I mean, it was just a classic bit of landscaping, about page 6 of the book, I think.
You've just gestured with your hands. Did your garden axis go at cross, as a cross?
An
Orton crosses rather than a religious cross.
Ah, yeah. Well, what you did, when I say they crossed, you came out of the carport on the side of the house. Say this is the block of land. House is here, the carport's there. Now, when you came out of the carport, looking from the carport, you could look down the garden that way. There was a workshop and things down there, yeah. Down there. And when you got into that one, there was another one went down the back of the garden that way. Now, off that, there were a couple of niches around the place and other paths that sort of, you could go around a corner, and even though it was only, 1,500 metre block, you could find little rooms in it. It was, it was nothing special. As I say, it was about page 6 of the landscaping book, I think, if I'm right.
It obviously gave you a lot of pleasure.
Oh, well, I put it together because we were... actually, I was better at that sort of thing than Beth was. She was great on the plant material and all that stuff. But I did the original ad, and it more or less... It's got overgrown over the 20 or 30 years since I did that. 30 years would be since I did that. It's got overgrown, but you can still see the lines of those two main axes in the thing, down the back. The front garden was nothing terribly spectacular, but as I always say, the front garden's for the public, the back garden's mine.
Do you have any thoughts about the direction in the early days that the society was taking?
Yeah, mainly looking for members and support. They did some good things. Howard Tanner was a tower of strength, and because he could always dredge up something, to look at. He did one, I can't remember, the National Trust or the Garden History Society, nearly 2 years ago now, out in the eastern suburbs. We went to Bushell's place, that one down in the harbour?
I don't know it.
It's like a Scottish Georgian house.
Yes.
Covered with ivy.
Yes, yes.
It's admired by yachtsmen as they sail past. I only ever once went there. We had a calamity with the boat I was sailing in. We rolled it over and we got it ashore there. They had a bit of a beach. And somebody came down from the house and said, would we as soon as possible get the boat away from there because it was private property. In fact, we were damn near drowned. It had nothing to do with it. But anyway, it was a lovely place. I, all my life I'd wanted to go ashore there and have a look at the place, and I finally did about 2 years ago.
Just not the style you wanted to enter it, though.
No. We didn't go into the house, naturally, but the grounds were interesting. But see, Howard did that. Then he had another place round in Rose Bay, and Howard's very good at finding those sorts of things to look at, and they're very interesting. And he's a great bloke. I mean, he's a very intense sort of joker, and he's done a lot of good for it.
And Robin LeWarn...
Robin LeWarn looked after the finances and things, and she had a few contacts around the place, the same as we did. But gradually, as I say, when we got more of the professionals in there, now like Silas, Clifton Smith, Clifford Smith, and a few of those others that work in the trade, once they got in and got their mates interested in it, and then it's gone from strength to strength. And you see, I don't know if you've looked at any of the publications they've done. Have you been through those?
For a small organisation that hasn't been established very long, essentially, they've got a great record.
Oh, I think they're terrific. Well, this last book I got the other day, I haven't really had a look at it yet, just looked through the index. But I look forward to getting them. They're interesting reading.
Did you and Beth have much to do with the genesis of the Oxford Companion?
No, not really. Main thing I had to do with that was shell out about $100 to buy it for her for last Christmas 12 months. I've got a copy of it down here somewhere.
What about the conservation side of the society? Do you remember any particular conservation issues that the society was involved in?
No, I don't, because as far as I'm aware, they did some work mainly in Victoria. They did a bit out in the eastern suburbs there around Coogee. Church, I think at Randwick, they
did a survey of that. I've never done any of that sort of thing because, well, over the last 17 or 18 years since I retired, I've been more or less plagued with this infernal back and what you have you of mine. And, you know, I haven't got the mobility that I need to do any of those things.
Was Beth involved in that side of it?
No, not really. She was too busy making sure I didn't fall over. And also, we worked on our own garden. I mean, we opened our garden for the Garden History Society once at least, and I know probably twice. But and people used to, in the Garden History Society used to come and see us. I mean, they give us a ring and say, well, we're out, can we pop in? Yes, it's in chaos. You can help us rake up the lawn or something. But oh no, we opened it. In fact, I, as far as I recollect, we opened it twice at least for the Garden History Society. Hey, that's over a period of about what 20 years or more.
Well, there's a role in a society for a great diversity of experience.
Oh, yeah, that's right. There is. Yeah, expertise. Yeah, that's right. Yeah. Now, what else?
Lindsay, just talking about some of the people that you remember from those days. Dick Clough was one you mentioned?
The one, say again?
Dick Clough was one name you
mentioned? Yeah, Professor Clough. Well, I knew him by repute because I had a lot to do with providing Canberra with building materials. They were one of my great outlets down there. Anybody who was involved in the building of Canberra over a period of about 30 years knew that Dick Clough was the landscaping expert. See, he's got an amazing collection of associations. He goes back to Professor Waterhouse, you know, the camellia man. I think it was he, if I remember rightly. Dick told me that he met him in England and recommended he get into landscape architecture, and that's how Dick got into that. Dick was actually the first professor of landscape architecture at the University of New South Wales. I'm pretty sure that's right.
You're right, yes.
Yeah. And he's a good bloke too, Dick. Dreadful, dreadful giving lectures. Don't put that in the tape. And he's good value. I had him over at the Camellia Society this year, a few months ago. Beth and I had geared him up to do a talk there. And his idea was that now Beth had gone, we didn't want him to do that. And I said, oh, no, mate. Lecturers are too hard to get. Yes, now Dick was good value, or is good value. And
Peter Valder is another name you mentioned.
Yeah, Peter Valder. Well, Peter's, some of the work that Peter's done with, his wisterias, knowledge of wisteria is incredible. I don't know if you ever recollect going up there to his place at, the family place up there, all the wisteria is growing on the tennis court.
It's a beautiful house at Mount Wilson.
Well, I don't know about the house wasn't much, but the garden was fabulous.
Yes.
Yeah. And he's a very good bloke as a speaker because you suddenly realise he's pulling your leg. And being quite irreverent.
He has a terrific sense of humour.
Oh, yeah, frightful sense of humour. Dreadful, yeah. And a nice fella. But those were the ones that... They gave a great fillip to the people coming into the society. And then all of a sudden, to my amazement, when I saw a list of members, I was quite amazed at how many members they had got. Initially, most of the members came from the eastern suburbs. And with a few over this side. Well, now it's gone all embracing. And I understand, I'm not sure, you'd have to check on this. I think that they've got sort of sub-branches scattered around the countryside.
I think they're looking to do...
I think they've got things like that. We've got the same sort of thing in the Camellia Society. Well, we haven't got branches. We've got people who belong to the Australian Camellia Research Society, which is based here at New South Wales branch, based here at Gordon, but we've got sort of sub-cells up on the north coast and various places around the place.
Is there much overlap with the Garden History Society and some of these other horticultural associations?
No, not really. Probably the Camellia Society more than most, in a way, because I don't know if you're familiar with this, as far as the Community Society is concerned. This will give you a bit of an idea of the sort of thing that can happen. That's the International Community Society, Vol 1.
Plunk as it hits the desk.
Camellias. Millions of them. Yes. 30-odd thousand names in there. Took them years to put that together.
This would be a great reference.
Oh, it is. It's a fantastic reference document, yeah. Well, there's another one like that and a supplement. They're a bargain, actually. $160 for three.
It's the size of a major dictionary.
Well, it is. International Camellias. Yeah. Well, I've just sold one of these sets to the gardener here. He was in talking to me the other day and saw these. I showed him these. Poor man, he's not quite white now. He assisted to check. Anyway, says he brings me $160, he gets the set. But no, they're good. And that's up to about 1995, I think. It took them 50 years to put it together. Internationally working on that, you see. So in a way, it's the only one I know. The Rose Society might do something similar. I don't know.
Well, the gestation time I know for the Garden History Oxford Companion was
that would have taken
years.
20 years, I would think.
And a considerable philanthropic gesture as well to fund it.
It's a wonderful publication.
It is.
There's one down there somewhere, that I think, unless one of the girls nicked it. When I moved my books, I mean, that's just the remnants of what was left of those of our books I had at Beecroft. The girls cleaned it out and took a lot of it. Then I went through it and kept what I wanted to keep. And dear old Vinnie DePaul, St. Paul, got a whole heap of stuff. But no, that bottom shelf's practically all gardening. Yeah, we had quite a collection.
Lindsay, I'm just thinking, are there any other aspects of the Australian Garden History Society's history and Beth's involvement with it that we haven't touched upon?
No, I don't think so. She knew a lot of the people in it, you know, that are running it now. We went to all their things. I mean, we gave it support. I mean, after the initial stages, and it started to go, and Colleen Morris came out, and Jan Glusky dropped out, and you know, the guard changed there about 5 or 6 years ago.
It needs to, I think, in a society.
Oh, it's got to. It's got to. I mean, I think they did remarkably well to hang on to it as long as they did, and to keep it going. I mean, quite frankly, Beth and Robin. I mean, any lesser mortals would have chucked their hand in with it.
What was such a struggle for them?
Just to get people interested in it.
So people weren't so interested in garden history or gardens?
No, I don't think they knew what it was all about.
Well, Beth seemed certainly very warmly regarded.
Oh, yes, yes. Well, she was with anything she did. She, you know, I mean, it's the same with our bookbinding. You know, the professionals reckon she was one of the best amateur binders in the business. She wasn't artistic, didn't do any much in the way of artistic bindings, really, but her craft work is, you know, first class.
And you have these beautiful flower embroiderings.
Oh, yeah, all that stuff, yeah.
Yes.
Well, the thing up there behind you, the wall there. Yeah, whatever she did, she did well at it. Yeah. Bit hard to live with at the time. No, it wasn't really. Yeah. Actually, we were probably good foils for one another. She was as meticulous as I am, slapdash. But, it was good too that... well, you see, that you often find... That tape's off, isn't it?
No, the tape's on. Would you like me to
Just turn it off.
Lindsay, I wanted to thank you very much for participating in this project and giving of your time to the Garden History Society. Thank you.
Now, if you...